Welcome to Vacation Station, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's third Friday Travel Writers Panel discussion with the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. They are a great organization that connects writers and photographers and journalists with destinations and people in the tour operations, like tour operators. You could be a winemaker, winery, a chef, a restaurant. Everybody belongs together. And if you're not a member, you should go to ifwpwa.org and check it out. We love this show because we love to get travel writers together to talk about different destinations, where they've been. We want the scoop because they travel the world and they travel across the country. And you know what? They go to places we may never have, you know, ever thought of going. And today we're focusing on outdoor destinations. And as many of you know, Nancy and I travel full time on our Love Your Parks tour across the country, documenting parks and public lands. So this is fantastic. And June is the great outdoors month. So we're keeping in theme. Let's see if we can stay on track on this show. Who knows? I want to welcome Julie D. Suman back on the show. Julie was on our show last year talking about an amazing Kenilworth Gardens. Isn't that right, Julie?
Kenilworth. Yeah, yes. You got it right. We had a lot of fun last year, and Kenilworth Gardens is still worth visiting.
You know, I still need to get there. Nancy and I still, we have not made it, but we'll get there. Maryland. We did get to more of Maryland this year. You'd be proud. Right. We've started to understand the Chesapeake Bay region. We went to some state parks. We went all over by Queenstown, that area. Yeah. Very beautiful.
It's lovely, that part of the near the Chesapeake. It's lovely.
Yeah, and we were on the Wye River or the River Wye and watched ospreys take care of their babies, and they were nesting and... Yeah, that whole area is gorgeous. And then we went down to Virginia. Yeah, so you live in a beautiful area. You really do.
Yeah, I feel lucky. I'm quite happy about it. I'm sure that Kat, who will talk later today, will also have some great things to say about her side of the world. But yeah, I do like being near the Chesapeake Bay for sure.
I love it. So what's so cool about it is that you guys are in direct opposite destined areas, and we're going to be talking about opposite areas on the show today. So I want to bring Kat on, and Kat likes coffee. She likes to wear mascara. You can find her at coffeeandmascara.org. Catherine Anderson, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. You know, I mean, coffee and mascara, those are the two things that any avid traveler needs. Coffee makes you awake. Mascara makes you look awake when you're not really awake.
Yeah, so I think that's
anyone
a good
who's taking
one.
A red eye flight, we know.
yeah, exactly. And we do need coffee. It's like the one thing. It's like I'm already reaching for it no matter where I'm waking up. I'm like, where is it? It needs to be there. It should be right there. It's just we want it instantly. But you're in Vancouver, in British Columbia, Vancouver, not Washington State, just to make sure. And from the photos and the links you've sent me on your website, it seems like you are in like this beautiful urban setting that has a bunch of nature. So it's got this really good balance.
It does. The one crazy thing about Vancouver is, I mean, I live downtown Vancouver in the city, but I'm also staring at the ocean and Stanley Park, the forest right now. So right out the doorstep of downtown Vancouver, you've got the beaches and the mountains, which is amazing.
Wow. I love it. And Julie, you're in Maryland area, but today, your destination, you're going to be talking about Gulf Shores. This is a national seashore, Gulf Islands.
Yes. Gulf Islands National Seashore. Yes, it is actually the largest protected national seashore in the U.S. down in outside of Pensacola, Florida. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're going to talk about my trip to down south from this past spring.
Now, I used to live in Pensacola, old stomping grounds. Mm-hmm. Yep. I had a good time, and we've been out that way a couple times over the last few years, not all the way into Pensacola, which I miss. I love Pensacola and the Seville Quarter. Did you go to the Seville Quarter? This is an important question.
Yeah, we spent some time downtown, that was one of the things that fascinated me about Pensacola, in addition to all of the outdoor activities, is they have a fantastic quality of life downtown. There's so much to see, so much history as well. Exploring the Museum of Art, as well as some of the historic centers where you can learn about the Spanish and the French and all of the other flags that flew over that city, all of their influences in the town. It's great.
A lot of stuff went down in Pensacola. I mean, it's a coastal city, but it's also a military region as well.
The Blue Angels have a big presence there. The Navy, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I think when we talk about outdoor destinations, a lot of people don't realize. And as we do national parks and everything and state parks, most of the time, if you're in an outdoor area, you're going to find history there too. And is that something you would say, Kat, for Vancouver?
It's funny to bring up the word history. I mean, my country, Canada, is, we're not even 200 years old, right? So our history, we have an Indigenous history.
Stanley
Park does have the totem poles, which you only see in Alaska and Vancouver. They're not everywhere in the world. So we do definitely have history. It's a different type of history. We also have an area of Vancouver that's quite haunted. So we do have a little bit of a...
Now we like that. Ooh. Yeah. We like the haunted history. That is awesome. Yes. Before we get into the different destinations, I want to kind of back up and just kind of get people to know who you are as travel writers. So Julie, I know you do a lot of national park travel, and what's your Facebook for everybody to follow your adventures?
Sure. And my Facebook page is C by Julie D. So that's S-E-E by Julie D-E-E.
Okay. She's got it. I just know you from seeing you all the time. I'm like, there she is on Instagram too. I love following you on Instagram.
Thank you. And I have to take a moment to give props to Kat for teaching me some of my Instagram skills. So she is an awesome resource to learn from.
Well, she's got the marketing background, right? So this is part of why IFTWA is so cool, is writers helping each other, isn't it? Yes. That's part of that.
Yeah.
We don't gatekeep.
We're here to help, which is nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's about tourism at the end of the day. It's getting people to destinations and helping people and helping the communities. It's the messenger service. I love that. I love that. But Julie, it seems that you do a lot of parks. I mean, I'm always following look, she's there. I've been there. Oh, I haven't been there yet. Ooh. jealous.
I love to be outside. Nature is healing to me, and I'm becoming... I'd say I'm an amateur birder, and so I'm learning how to not only photograph, but start to try to identify birds, and I take whatever opportunity I can to do that, especially in the Baltimore area and the Delmarva Peninsula, Delaware, Virginia, and Maryland. We have a lot of opportunities to get out and do that. And that was one of the things that took me to Pensacola, was to get a chance to go and be there during the spring migration and check out some of the birds that were passing through on their way from the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, I love that. And you're getting the coastal birds too. So it's, that's what's interesting as well, because you also have the inland. And I don't think people realize that area is really green with forests. You get forest and beach.
Yeah. And you also have the big giant live oak trees. There were times when I felt like I might've been in Savannah or something with these, gigantic oaks too. So it's definitely an interesting, area from a landscape standpoint.
I love that. And you talk about the healing part of nature. Is that part of what led you to be a travel writer, is to write those things for others?
That's a good question, actually. I definitely like to educate. I think I come from an educating, background in my family, and it's a good opportunity to share my experience and help to inform others about the history or the wildlife of an area. I've also had a love of photography, and I kind of came into writing via my photography. I found it as a way to help get some of my my photographs published. And that's what really, you know, started my journey into to travel writing as well.
Interesting. And I want to go back over to you, Kat. Tell us a little bit about you getting into this, because I was reading, you know, that, you know, we talk about a healing sense of going outside, that that really is part of your journey as becoming a writer, but also like a self journey of healing and fitness. And now I feel I need to come to a boot camp with Kat. I'm just saying, I travel through parks and everything, but being on the road full time is maybe not always the healthiest thing.
A lot of people do struggle with that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. My travel writing definitely does have a wellness angle to it, for sure. Early on in my life, my dad was, he was a teacher and a vice principal, but he also did a little travel writing on the side. So I grew up with a family that traveled from day one. So I feel really blessed that I got exposed to travel at an early age. But because my dad wrote a column for our local newspaper, I got to see, hey, wait a minute. Did he get that cruise? Because he writes the article. And the wheels started turning for me at a really early age. And then, well, my father passed away when I was 21, and that devastated my entire life. And it was through travel and fitness that I bounced back and sort of found myself again. So for me, absolutely, nature is my healer. If I'm having an off day, I feel very blessed to have Stanley Park right outside my front door. It's amazing what a half an hour of breathing in fresh forest air can do for a person. For me, it's definitely very healing, for sure.
Absolutely. And then what about being active in these outdoor areas? Doesn't that kind of help too? Because you've got that healing quality. A lot of times the air is cleaner, but actually moving. When you go through grief, and I was reading that on your site too, grief is a really hard thing. And if you just sit with it, it just doesn't.
Grief is a beast, is what I like. There's different stages. And we all do it differently, and there's no right or wrong way. Everyone grieves in different ways, and it's all okay. For me, there were days where I wanted to ignore the world. So I would go out and I would go hiking. And one of my friends was like, nope, we're going to go for a hike, and we're not going to talk. We're just going to hike, and we're going to enjoy nature. And then there's other days where I needed to talk, and I needed to sit, or I needed to go for a swim and a cry, right? Mm-hmm. But in all of those ways, just being out in nature was a way for me to reconnect and find myself again. Yeah, I am very active in the outdoors.
Yeah, no, it really is. I think you can't, like, if you're mad at something or somebody and you take a walk in nature, you can't stay angry that long.
You can't because you realize how small you are. I mean, in this universe, I mean, for me, I look up, we've got some of the tallest trees in the world here. And I'm like, okay, you know, at the end of the day, is what I'm mad about really a big deal? Am I still?
See, you are Canadian. You said at the end of the day. You said at the end of the day. That is so Canadian. I love that. At the end of the day.
Have I said eight yet? Have I dropped?
No, I don't know, but you haven't done pitter patter. Let's get at her yet. So
that's not one of my sayings.
Okay, that's a Letterkenny thing. Don't watch that.
But nature does remind you of how small you are in this big universe. It puts things in perspective.
That's what I was thinking with bird watching, Julie. That really, it amazes me when, like right now, just before this, I'm helping a baby bird that knocked into a window. Baby oriole, like seriously. Like, aww. I'm like,
dude. That's very good of you.
And I saw a rose-breasted grosbeak today, and I've never seen one. And I flipped out. Like, you know, it like flipped out because they're so beautiful. I actually thought it was a trogon. That shows that I'm from Arizona. I'm like they don't have them here, but there is something about understanding like these small birds, right, going all the way to the big trees like the sequoias or the big trees that you have in your backyard, Kat. The tiniest of things to little insects like ladybugs, all the way when you film and photograph and write and you start to watch the birds, because you can't just take a photo, you have to kind of sit to capture that, right?
Yeah.
Then you start to realize how everything's connected.
Yeah. No, you really have to tune in. Like, you're listening for the sounds. You're looking for little signs that the bird might be in that area. Following the weather even can, you know, help you try to figure out where the birds are going to be. And, you know, speak, Speaking of wellness, I actually read an article a few weeks ago how birding can actually link to improved mental health. And I think it's for some of the reasons that we just talked about. You know, you're out there, you're focusing on something else, and, you know, just trying to take it all in. And I can see the benefits of it. And you sound, though, Lisa, like you might be one of those birders who has like a little list where they're trying to find birds they've never seen before.
No, not really. I just, you know what? We travel full time. So I forget where we are. Like, you know what I mean? Like suddenly I'm used to like a hooded oriole and then there's Baltimore Orioles here. And it's like, wow, like they're intense. Like they're different. And then so everybody's seasons are a little different. So it's, I mean, America is a huge country. And North America, got to include Canada, our friends.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, you do.
We got Mexico too. I used to live in Mexico.
We do.
But it's really hard because sometimes when you see a bird real quick, like I go back to my roots of being, you know, growing up in Kenya and South Africa. So it's like, oh, it's this. And I'm like, no, I'm not there. But then some of those birds do come here. So there's this wheel that goes in my head of crazy. Like literally.
No, not crazy.
All right. It's cool. But yeah, you know, I don't do the checklist, but I do iNaturalist and Seek on your phone. I love that because I know a lot of birders do like eBird and it's part of citizen science that when you're out, and I think as travelers, as travel writers, we have this thing of we're giving back and we're connecting people to places that can heal them, make them happy. Helps the local economy, all of those great things. But there's also that other step as travelers to give back into what we're doing. And I think for those of us that are into the outdoors and nature, we get that in history, right? To give back in some way. I think most travelers are that way, but that is a way because of citizen science. It's helping all these researchers and biologists use this data. So I think that's something really cool we can all do as travelers and writers and photographers for sure.
Yeah. No, it appeals to me in my day-to-day life as I am a scientist. So it does appeal to me in that sense.
That's right. I remember you are. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. That's right. So Kat, for you, do you do any of those apps? I know you're into Instagram. She even has a whole article, everyone, on the most Instagrammable places in Vancouver.
I do. No, I have a Stargazer app because I do enjoy looking at constellations. But I don't have one for plants or birds or any of that.
Oh, wow. See, I don't do the Stargazer. I have no clue. I just go, is that Uranus? I didn't say that.
That is the one time it's appropriate to say that.
whenever I have that opportunity, I can't help but take it. Julie, so these apps and things, this is a whole other topic, but getting out there with birds and getting those photos, getting it out there, putting these articles together. You've got one on Pensacola and everyone's articles we're talking about will be linked in the show notes. So whether you're watching on YouTube or Facebook or listening on Spotify, wherever it is, look at the link section. Everyone's articles will be there. But putting this all together, you know, you just went to Pensacola, now you've got all this history. How many times you got this history, you got the nature, you got the birds, and you've got the ocean, you got the swampy areas, you got the forest. When you go there, are you looking, because I want to get into the travel writing section too.
Sure.
You think, oh, I'm going to do this story. And then by the time you leave, you have 20 stories in your head?
Definitely. I don't know if I have 20, but I do have more than I went there for the birding aspect. And that was, you know, a specific idea that I had in mind. But what I didn't appreciate or didn't know that I would learn about is, like, for example, on Gulf Islands, there is Fort Pickens, which was actually built in the, I think it was the mid 1800s. I'm sorry, 1834. I just looked at my notes. It was built in 1834. And it was built by hand. It's an all brick fort, and it was meant to fortify that part of Pensacola to protect the naval yard and also the assets that Pensacola had. And I didn't know the fort was there, and we got to walk around and explore it and go to the Discovery Center. The park rangers there were fantastic. The fort even has a part of history in terms of being a part of the Underground Railroad network. So I would have never thought that I would turn into, you know, learning about the Underground Railroad network at a fort.
On an island. Yeah, that's so, it's interesting.
You know, so that's the story to explore, as well as the other aspects of the history that I've learned going downtown in Pensacola. So yeah, I definitely have multiple story ideas to pursue.
I know how that happens. Does that happen to you, Kat?
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, I was speaking of Florida, so I was there last fall. Sadly, Hurricane Ian cut my trip a little bit short, but we won't get into that. I was there. One of the things that we went down to Tarpon Springs and learned all about the sea sponge.
Oh,
and that for me, like being cool and wellness, I came home and threw out every sponge and loofah in my house. There's now sea sponges everywhere. And it's one of those things where I was like, okay, I knew Florida had beaches and I knew I was going to write about beach bars and the hotel I was staying in. Had no idea I was going to become so interested in sea sponges. Right. And that was going to be something that I would write about as well. So you honestly never know what you're going to happen across.
Well, there's something interesting with that, with the sea sponges and taking, you know, that's the thing about when we're talking about the great outdoors is getting people to go to these experiences that you have and hoping that they understand to protect these places. And and what you're saying about what do we have in our homes that maybe isn't really good for what's happening in the environment. So the sea sponge, that's interesting. So you got stuck on the sea sponge.
I did. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. And did you see manatees or is that? They're
I did. Yes. We went kayaking and we did see two manatees, which was pretty cool. I don't think I'd ever heard of a manatee, let alone seen one until I was there, which was pretty cool.
That is cool. That's epic to me. I've seen manatees, not like where, like as close up. Well, I've seen them close up, but not like how you see them in all the pictures and everything, just timing, you know, fall, late fall, winter is really a good time because the water's lower in Florida. And it's the same thing for, you know, seeing alligator. That's my thing, is alligators. Okay. I'm weird.
The water was actually so low. We beached our kayaks. So we had a really good laugh. This was me and Noreen, Julie, you love them. We're kayaking and all of a sudden we're like, we're like, wait a minute. And we look down and we're like, oh, like our oars aren't even like, that's how shallow the water was.
Oh, wow.
We're doing it. So we're laughing our heads off because we are now stuck in our kayak. We had to hop
up. That's funny.
Move it along.
That is funny. That is funny. So when it gets over to Vancouver, so we're talking about Florida, tropical. Here's all these, you know, manatees and birds. Vancouver, the waterfront, like Vancouver is different. You've got like the Salish Sea and everything, right?
We do, yeah. What you'll see here, we do whale watching tours. And I wasn't actually on a whale watching tour. I was just on the BC ferries, headed over to Vancouver Island, and orcas were swimming beside the ferry, which is always an amazing thing to see. It's not that common. But if you do go out on a boat anywhere in the Vancouver Harbor, you're very likely to see some sea lions or some otters like swimming alongside you.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Now, Julie, what about birds for you when you were out in Pensacola? What kind of bird life did you see?
So we saw, you know, the osprey, as you mentioned, they were, you know, they were nesting and flying around, but we were able to see a lot of birds that were, you know, on their migratory path from, you know, coming across the Gulf of Mexico. One of my favorite birds that I saw was a scarlet tanager. It was this beautiful red bird that I had never seen before. And it just, you know, it stood out so bright. It's even brighter than a cardinal, you know, against the greenery and things like that. It was super cool. We saw a cerulean warbler, blue wing warblers, orchard orioles, gray catbirds, red-eyed vireo, which I had never seen, and a white-eyed vireo. So, you know, all kinds of small birds that I had never, you know, had a chance to see before.
And then even seeing pelicans to me is epic. Like,
yeah.
And seeing seagulls and pelicans to me are just like, oh yes, I forgot about you, but I love you.
Yeah, we went
seagulls. We see far too many seagulls here in Vancouver.
Oh, come on, but they're nice. I remember when we were in Anacortes last year or the year, I can't remember. When we were there, they were walking down the street, Anacortes in Washington, not far from where you are, Kat, and they're walking down the street and they're like, and I'm walking a dog and the seagull's looking at the dog going, yo, this is my street. Like, seriously, they took ownership. Yeah. But what kind of bird life do you see? I mean, you were talking about otters, though. That's really cool, having otters.
Yeah, that's very cool. Every once in a while, I will look out my window and I will see a bald eagle fly by. That, to me, I never tire of that. I think that's amazing.
That's epic.
From that to hummingbirds. We were up on our rooftop patio and a hummingbird flew by. So from the tiniest to the biggest predators, we kind of have, you know, we've got those. Herons we do see at the Lost Lagoon at Stanley Park. Obviously lots of seagulls and lots of our Canadian geese. They're the ones that you'll be driving down the street and you'll have to stop because rush hour is the Canadian geese family, like crossing the crosswalk.
And they are not from Canada, just for everybody to know. They're not. Yeah, right. So with you having that, you keep talking about Stanley Park. So let's tell everybody about Stanley Park. Give everyone an overview.
Sure. Stanley Park is Vancouver's urban park, and it is actually bigger than Central Park in New York City. Fun fact. It's huge. Part of it is along the water. So it's what we call our seawall. So you can actually walk. It's about, I'm going to say it in kilometers. So I don't know how many miles that is, you guys.
It's all right.
A 12-kilometer stretch where you start on one side of downtown and you walk around the perimeter of Stanley Park.
That's about 25 miles, I think. Yeah, I think. Oh, don't listen to me. Do not listen to me.
The other way around.
Don't listen to me.
The park itself, there's an aquarium. There's a tea house. There's a pitch and putt golf. There's tennis courts. There's a brew pub. There's just so many things. You could easily spend the entire day, if not 2 days, exploring the park. There's trails everywhere. And there is a lake called Beaver Lake. You guys, I have yet to see a beaver in Beaver Lake, so I'm a little disappointed there, but they are there. They do live there.
So they say.
So they
Legend
say.
Has it. Yeah. Legend has it. I haven't
personally seen one, but apparently.
That's easy. Just, you have to keep going back.
Yeah, my timing's been off.
I remember the gardens were also, I've been to Stanley Park once. I remember the flower gardens were also just stunning.
Yes. Yeah. The rose gardens. I mean, when they bloom, they are stunning. Ooh. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you have a rose garden. See, it is June is rose month. It is national. And it's our American state country flower. Our national flower is the rose.
Oh, I didn't know.
And it all came from because of the peace rose. And it was during one of the world wars and it has to do with France. And they saved the tea rose and brought it on a plane during all these bombings. And here we are now, it's our rose. There it is.
Well, look at that.
That was a very short, terrible description of it, but there's a long history that I wrote many years ago. But that it is cool though. I mean, tea roses are beautiful too, but you know, but listen, that's what's amazing to me is Julie is near Kenilworth, which is all these water lilies. That is something to just walk among flowers like that, the aquatic flowers.
Yeah, in about a month or so, they're going to start to be in their peak. So you need to get back down here, Lisa.
I know. I'm going to put the link to Kenilworth in the show notes for people to read your article from before. Because they have a festival coming up, right?
I think in July. Usually, I think it's the third weekend in July. They have a festival down there.
Ah, see? Okay, this is cool. So that's the other part is seeing the wildflowers. So let's look at the wellness aspect. We were talking about that earlier. When you're out in a park, what do you guys think about wellness? And I want to go to you, Kat, first. In regards to observation and looking at the little things in nature as being something that helps your body kind of focus, declutter, almost meditational. Do you think it helps that way?
I think for sure it does. I mean, when we're having a bad day, it's like the whole world revolves around us because all we can think about is how X is going wrong, right?
It's all about me.
It's all about me, of course. It's all about me. My day is terrible. Something's gone wrong. Yeah. But as soon as you go outside and you step into nature and you look at a blooming flower or you look at a leaf that has fallen on the ground or you see a little caterpillar, you realize, wait a minute. Okay, but like, is my life all that bad? It's not really, you know, whatever's going on today, this too shall pass. At the end of the day, being in nature, to me, it gives me that perspective that I'm often lacking in the moment when I'm frustrated or when I have writer's block. Writer's block is the worst because, you know, those times when you're like, I have an article I have to write, and you sit at your computer and you're like, blank screen, screen of death. That's when I'll go for a walk, and that's when inspiration will hit. Just you might smell a flower, you might see a butterfly, and something, you know, just sparks that inspiration that you needed because you got out of your own head and thinking that, you know, the world revolves around you when it really doesn't.
Wow. I really love that. Where we are right now in Iowa, it's just it's like we basically are surrounded by meadow flowers and forests and pollen and pollen. So there you go. That's why my voice is the way it is right now. But it's beautiful and it's gorgeous, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. Mm-hmm. But there's the driveway. There's this big crack in the driveway. And I was looking at this yesterday, taking a walk. The crack in the driveway is plants with little flowers all in it. Aww. Like I was thinking about that. You know, I think that Leonard Cohen wrote something about that kind of thing, where there's a crack in glass or something like that, that's when the light comes through. Mm-hmm. And I think when we don't get outside and walk and be in nature, we don't see the shift of negative to positive and the strength, that resilience, you know. And I think that's where, Julie, when you talk about birds are so resilient. When you think about them migrating, does that give you kind of that extra boost of hope? Like, dude, they're flying, like they go from Canada all the way down to Mexico. Some of them go to Africa. I mean, they're not getting on a plane and going with luggage.
No. And when I went down there, I had a husband and wife couple, Brendan and Jerry, who were our guides. And they were explaining, you know, about the migration. And most of the birds they come from the Yucatan Peninsula, and they will literally fly overnight across the Gulf to Pensacola. And so that's one of the reasons why you get to see them, because they're exhausted by the time they reach that part. So they have to, you know, land to feed, to rest. And so that's one of the, you know, the things that you know, creates that opportunity for the birding there. So, yeah, I mean, just watching their habitat and how they, you know, they're recovering, and, you know, it takes your mind off of, you know, what we've mentioned that a couple of times already, but, you know, it's a great opportunity for that. And I think one of the other, you know, benefits of Gulf Islands is you're near the ocean as well. For me, you know, sitting and watching the water, especially when there's waves, I think it helps, you know, with the decompression, I could sit there for hours, and it just really helps me chill out, because I'm not good at sitting still, but I can sit still near at the ocean.
Yeah. There's that rhythm and that sand, that white sand.
Oh yeah. That quartz sand is like, it's like sugar. It's just crystal white.
Oh man, it is gorgeous out there. And I've been to different parts. Don't you have to go on a boat to get to the fort or some of the islands? No, or is that the Alabama portion?
There are four forts in the area. And the one that I mentioned, Fort Pickens, is across from Pensacola, on Pensacola Beach, that stretch there. So it's on the end of the island there, of that barrier island. So yeah, you don't need, you can drive to it actually, but there is a ferry, now that you mention it, there is a Pensacola ferry that will take you from the city across to various parts of the Gulf Islands, which is nice. So you could, you know, you could be there, you maybe not necessarily need a car, you could take the ferry over to Gulf Islands as well.
Ah, so that's cool. And you could do all kinds of water activities too.
I mean, when I was there, the water, it was a little rough, but so we didn't get to really go out and do some kayaking, and also we were going to go on a sailing trip, you know, and watch the sunset. Unfortunately, the weather didn't work out for us, but those opportunities are there. There's snorkeling, and another thing that's fun. So the ferry that I mentioned also runs a couple of tours when the Navy's Blue Angels practice. The ferry goes out into Pensacola Bay, and you can watch the Blue Angels doing their flight maneuvers and practicing all their aeronautics. And so it's kind of cool to be out there on the ferry and in the bay, you know, watching and hearing these, you know, these jets just zoom past you. So that was pretty cool.
That is awesome. What about water in Stanley Park? Is there a place to play?
We have beaches in Vancouver. Now, unlike Florida, we don't have soft white sand, but we do have sand. We do have beaches. We're not known for snorkeling because our water is not crystal clear, but
it's cold.
I mean, it is. You know what though? I swam in the ocean last Monday. So, and it actually wasn't that bad.
What? Didn't need mascara and coffee.
Wear a wetsuit. I just swam. I went in. Yeah. I swam for like a good 15.
Go, girl.
We go again tonight, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. Right now is good because the tide is out during the day. So as it comes in, like that sunset swim, when the ocean comes in, it's a fair bit warmer. I actually thought I'd be in and out in a quick second, but I swam for a good 15, 20 minutes last week.
Nice.
I'm going to try again tonight. Yeah.
Ooh. Now, what would you
for scuba diving? I will just quickly point. However, you do have to wear a very thick wetsuit or a dry suit because winter is our season for scuba diving. And trust me, you don't want to be in our oceans in February unless you are protected. But we have octopus and all sorts of cool things you can see down there.
I want to see the octopus. Now, have you scuba dived?
Yes, I am PADI certified deep water as well as dry suit. I actually got dry suit in Vancouver with my dry suit. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Tell people the difference about this. We have a friend, Lee Brovidani. She's from Canada, Nova Scotia area.
Yeah.
Well, that's where she's going. But she does this dry diving thing. And she's interned. She travels the world diving.
Yeah.
And it's different. So explain it's that so for different. Folks who don't know.
So basically, if you're going to go scuba diving in a dry suit, you're going to get dressed like you're going to go skiing. No joke. You're going to put on your warm clothes. Then you're going to put on this dry suit. And when you go into the water, it's the craziest thing because you don't get wet. I mean, your face obviously is going to get wet, but the rest of you stays dry and you stay a lot warmer. So you can actually go into, I mean, I was 100 feet down in our ocean here in Vancouver, which I don't care what month it is, 100 feet down in any ocean is going to be cold. But you don't feel it because you're dressed warmly and you're in the dry suit. Buoyancy is very different. So there is definitely a certification process for it because you got to kind of weight yourself to stay down. But the craziest part is when you come out of the water and you take the suit off, you're like, wait, I'm dry. Mm. It's crazy. Yeah. But it's really the only way to see the cool stuff that's far down. And we do have a shipwreck in Vancouver at Porto Cove. You can see this kind of stuff because you've got a dry suit. So you don't get hypothermia.
See, but this is the thing about the outdoors. A lot of times we're used to hiking paths, scenic drives, cycling, horse riding. But it's about getting out on the water, maybe paragliding, maybe staying up to see the night sky with your app, right? Those kind of things, looking down under the water, looking in tide pools. And I love a good tide pool. Don't you guys love tide pools?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So I think that's something we forget sometimes is we just stick to that norm. But there's so many ways to experience the outdoors. And that helps kids get involved. I mean, Julie, did your parents get you involved with nature? I mean, where did your love of parks and nature come from?
Well, yeah, I do give my parents a lot of credit to that. When I was 13 years old, I was 13 and my sister was 12. We drove across the United States. We took a 3-week trip, sort of maybe a mini version of what you and your mom do now. But and we hit all of these national parks. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. So we drove across the north. We went to the Badlands, Devil's Tower, Yellowstone, out to Oregon. And we hit the national parks in California and then the Grand Canyon and came back across through the South. So that definitely started my love of the national parks for sure. And because we were doing this all in 3 weeks, maybe we got to spend like a day or two in a park. So it's been my goal to go back to national parks and actually stay for, 5 days or longer, as long as I can to really get to explore the park because, it's easy to take the loop around the park and see things, but you really need to, I think, get out. You need to go and do some hiking, talk to the rangers, go to the summer, some of the ranger programs to really get the essence of that national park.
I absolutely agree. Nancy and I have done both sides of that. And it's, you know, it's, I hate it when we do these, the drive-through park experiences, but you get to at least go. So I always tell people, do it. You have that opportunity, take it. It's better than being on the highway the whole time. If you can do that little bit of a taste of something, plan to go back. But if you didn't do it and something changes in life, you didn't see it. You know what I mean? So it's worth doing, but that's the thing. Yeah. Like I remember doing that in Petrified National Forest, and it was a crazy drive to get there. And it's a whole long story, but anyway, we ended up sleeping in our car outside the gate for the park to open. And it was the best star night. I mean, the stars were just like right there over us, and it was beautiful. And the sunrise was incredible. And a school bus came and picked up kids right outside our car. I'm like, wait, there's people here? What? Anyway, we went in and the, you know, the Petrified Forest National Park is really fascinating with history and the nature, hiking, geology, all the petrified wood and Route 66 and Native American history. And you've got, you know, petroglyphs, and you've got even like, what are they called? The Harvey girls. One of the Harvey houses are there, of, you know, the history of tourism. And we were there for one day and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is huge. But did I get to go do like a full day hike, overnight hike, camp, stay in the, you know what I mean? It's like, there's probably, like I said, that 20 story thing just from that one day. And I'm like, you know, it's so difficult because those parks just get you, like, you just want to keep coming back and keep coming back. But that's, I don't think you ever see it 100%.
No,
I don't
think true.
You can't.
Yeah,
you can't. But it's okay because you just keep going back and going other places and doing what you can. It's that, you know, that excitement of it. So I know, Kat, for you, I mean, traveling, you know, with your parents too is a big deal, and getting out into nature, that's a big deal. But what is your next park or next destination? Not necessarily park.
I love living in Vancouver, so I tend to do more smaller local trips. Later this week, I'm headed out to Harrison Hot Springs. It's about a 2-hour drive east of Vancouver. And then following that, we've got the Okanagan Valley, which is our wine region in BC. So I'll be doing some wine tours later this month. Keeping it local really until the fall to sort of enjoy all the local things here.
That's nice. So on the health and wellness aspect of what you do, wine is okay. We're allowed to do that. Cause you were talking about beach bars earlier. I'm like, wait a minute, we can beach bar and hike, or what's going on?
Absolutely.
Here?
My motto is balance. I am all about balance. So if you go for that hike, you eat that burger and you drink that beer.
Yeah. And I take it with me because if you climb a hill or a mountain, you can sit at the top and eat the leftover pizza and have that glass of wine. I do that.
You'll laugh. I actually went out and bought a picnic backpack that has a wine bottle holder on the side and a blanket on the other. No joke. This is my hiking backpack, you guys. Balance is key. I want that glass of wine at the top.
Okay. So this is bad. I've got like a mini backpack purse or handbag.
Yeah.
That is now really a camera bag too. Cause that's really how, I mean, the way we travel is weird, but it is. And it is also has a secret wine compartment.
I know those verses. I have heard of those verses.
And yeah, I have the backpack.
Next time.
I know. Listen, you never know like where we are and what we're doing, but we're always having a good time. But I figure if you put the sweat equity in, you know, and birds like it when you sit and calm down in nature and you go for a hike, get to an area, have your picnic lunch. This is truly how we travel. You have your picnic lunch, have your champagne. It started with us doing champagne hikes because I think the birds know about the yeast in the champagne. Hummingbirds come and butterflies, they know there's moisture. And when you're just sitting and having that picnic time and calm down, you can talk and everything, not be too crazy loud or anything, but just then they start to go, oh, they're here for a while. They're cool. Oh, they're doing this. Then everybody is there. And that's how you get your picture without carrying the giant lens.
Yeah.
I'll have to utilize that tip because those lenses for birding are heavy.
Yeah, no, I don't do that. I can't do that. It's too much. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a line, but there's also something about, I think getting the close-up shot of a bird or like, oh, here's the close-up of the heron. It's great. But there's something about the landscape, of showing the landscape of where you are. So it's in context. So people know mm-hmm. where they live and why it needs to be protected. That's just my soapbox kind of thing about yeah. people seeing mm-hmm. the connectivity of it all, you know, who lives where, not just here's the close-up of the bird that you could see anywhere, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't carry yeah. those big things. No, I'd rather carry a champagne bottle.
I'm with you, Lisa.
Hey, listen, but if you carry champagne, it's heavy. So yeah. do I get like points for that?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
And the hard part is going up the hike. So, you know, that's when yeah. you have the extra weight. So
yeah. And at that point, you may roll down and it's okay. Yeah. It's all right. You won't care. Julie, where's your next destination?
Well, believe it or not, I'm actually going to Chicago. So I'm Ooh. Actually doing an urban trip later this month. And then
There's parks.
Yes, yes, there are. I love urban parks and Stanley Park.
And is a lot of water.
Example of that. No, I mean, I crave that. When I'm in a city, I do find that I need to go and I need to find a green space. So, so yeah, I've never really been a tourist in Chicago. So I'm looking forward to that. And then at the end of the summer, I'm heading to Greece. So,
oh my yeah. gosh, that's going to be epic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. That's going to be super fun. Now, the International Food Wine Travel Writers Association has a conference this October, and it's on the cruise line with Princess Cruises going from Cat's Backyard.
Right.
in the it water portion is. Of it. It yeah. is. Like, are you going to welcome, like, come over to my house?
I joked with everyone. I was like, I can walk from my house to the cruise ship port.
Are you kidding? That's crazy. Yeah, and everyone, Kat is on the board of IFTWA. We say IFTWA, it's far more easier than saying yeah. International Food Wine Travel Writers Association. But you do their social media too, right?
I do, correct. Yes. Ah,
cool. Now, are you going on the conference? Are you going to be a welcoming committee?
Yes, I am going on the conference. I'm actually speaking at the conference as well about how to construct a social media strategy as a travel writer. So yeah,
I'm very cool.
Looking forward to the cruise.
Oh, that is so cool. So she's going to be the welcoming committee. So as everyone gets on the cruise line, she will be there with coffee and a little tube of mascara for every person. Are you going to teach people how to do mascara?
No, I'm not a beauty blogger. I wear the stuff. I'm not going to teach you how to wear it.
Okay, that's it. That's her, and all her tips are hers. That's it. She'll teach you social media though. But that's really cool that you're going to be there and that it's in your backyard. I think that's epic. And this 360 experience with Princess is going to be awesome for everyone. All amazing. The members that are there. Yeah. So everyone, it's in October. Go to ifwtwa.org for that information. And we have an interview with Amy Piper coming up this month as well, so people can hear more about that. So that's excellent. Julie, are you going to be able to go to the conference? Have you been to one yet?
I went to my first IFTWA conference last fall.
In Florida.
It was in St. Pete, which was awesome. And I will be on the cruise. I'm going to the conference, so I'm looking forward to that. We're in the process now of signing up for various press trips or that are going to be through the cruise, so anxious to see which ones I'll be able to do, and also look forward to learning how I can continue to up my social media game with Kat, and as well as some of the other lectures that we're going to have there. It looks like it's some great presentations that we're going to have during the cruise.
And I mean, again, like, you've got all the networking and the 360 experience with that dining experience. That's amazing. That immersive. Yeah.
Actually, now that I think about it, my trip to Pensacola, I met folks from Visit Pensacola at mm-hmm. the IFTWA concerts last fall. So that was my connection to Pensacola. So it's definitely worth going to these events to network.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to network. And then just being part of the organization too. Mm-hmm. I think also what they did during, you know, the pandemic of not stopping and continuing with, you know, webinars and getting everybody connected that way was excellent, you know, doing that. I think that's, we've got all these tools we didn't have 20 years ago, and we got to use them. Kat knows all about that. She's like, use it and then unplug, right? Yes. And then unplug. Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure. As we head off here, I want one tip from you, each of you, for someone just getting started in travel writing or photography. So let's start with you, Kat, before you go. What one tip other than coffee?
My one tip, if you want to be a travel writer, be persistent and don't take no personally, because no one doesn't mean no, it just means not right now. That's my tip. Get used to no's from editors, but it doesn't merely mean no. It might mean maybe later. It might mean yes to another publication. Persistency is key for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Julie, yeah. What is your tip?
Well, I absolutely echo what Kat has to say, but I think what I would add is, you know, finding your tribe, finding a group you can learn from and share information with. IFTWA has certainly been, you know, a good resource for that. The Travel Writers Cafe, Travel Writers University that exists as well has been an absolute resource for helping to navigate the ups and downs and the ins and outs of travel writing.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Do you want to give everyone your social media or website? Julie, give everyone your Facebook or Instagram.
Sure. My Instagram and Facebook is C by Julie D. And I hope you come and check it out.
Yeah, follow her. It's fun. It's fun. Kat, you want to give your website or socials, whichever?
Sure. All of my socials are Miss Kat Anderson, and my blog is coffeeandmascara.org.
Yes, .org. Yes, go there. Follow. And ifwtwa.org is a website for IFTWA. And you can keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thank you so much, ladies. Happy and safe travels. I can't wait to follow your adventures. I already do, but like, I want more. Get going.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.